Welcome to Classic 4x4, the podcast for classic four-wheel drive enthusiasts. I'm your host, Chris Piccone, and you can follow the Classic 4x4 podcast on Instagram at Classic 4x4 podcast, or follow myself and the trial and tribulations of my car collection and projects at Overland by the Sea. Today, we have a very interesting guest. He's a legend of some sort. His Instagram handle is Auto Legend. We have joining us today, Eric Rothenhaus. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to meet you again, Chris. How you doing?
I am well. Today is going to be a lot of fun to talk about your collection, because you have a collection that is very aligned with my collection, especially on the Jeep side of your collection. So I'm super excited to talk about that. You have an impeccably designed and well thought out collection. So want to talk about projects, how you got there. But before we do that, you know, I think it's very important for our listeners, the audience, and the community to get to know you. Who is Eric Rothenhaus? You know, where did you grow up? Where do you live? And most importantly, you know, what's the profession that affords you the ability to have this amazing classic car collection?
Well, afford is kind of a funky word. I'm broke most of the time trying to put collections together. So if it's not one thing breaking, it's another. And you know the word collection. It means it all breaks at one time.
So true.
You're always running from paycheck to paycheck. But I'm a transplant to California, where I live now. I'm in the Bay Area. And I've been out here since 1997. Actually grew up in New York City, in Queens area. And then before I left New York, I lived in Long Island, out in an area called Huntington, which is kind of the middle of Long Island. And I came out to California, kind of second degree. First degree was in something unusual. I was actually going to be a cop and studied crime scene investigation and ballistics and forensics. So my attention to detail, I think, started there because the teachers whipped it into me to follow all details. So 97, I came out to California for a vacation. And about 10 minutes into San Francisco, I crested what's called Potrero Hill. And you could see all of San Francisco and the sun going down. And that was all it took. So I kind of looked at the girl I was dating at the time, and we're in the cab, and I said,
lay the chrome bumper up front, the chrome bumperettes in the back. It was like, had the charcoal interior, but it had that inline 4.0 six cylinder. And that thing was bulletproof, man.
Yep. That's funny. That was your first, because remember you asked me what my first car was. So my first car was LeBaron, which I had for maybe 3 weeks. There was no, I couldn't drive it out of the driveway. It just was too embarrassing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my dad, who was a big sailor, wanted me to, like, you need to broaden your horizons, son. I'm going to send you down to the Caribbean for the summer, and you're going to crew on this sailboat. I was 15. I was like, man, I don't 14 and a half, 15. I don't want to do that. But I went down there, and actually where I got my inspiration for my first car that I purchased was down there. I was on Tortola. I don't know if you know that island.
Of course.
Taking this bus around with a bunch of other sweaty kids my age, and just, you know, we can't drink. We can't do anything really there. But coming up this hill, making a turn, was this white Wrangler and a guy at the top and the doors off it. He's a good looking cat, but the woman next to him was, man, she's gorgeous. And I'm like, oh, and the radio's blaring Bob Marley. I was like, oh, this is,
that's it. That's it.
I saw that and I'm like, oh yeah, that's me. I need top and doors off shit. That's how you got to roll.
Yeah.
So funny story. My dad's a Jeep guy. We've always had Jeeps. He went to go get a new one. And for months I saved up to buy my first one. I was like every loan you could think of. Everything to make money. I worked at a deli. I was terrible making sandwiches. Like every job you could think of to make money, I was terrible at it. But I'd make enough to put it away. I'd squirrel it. So my dad went to go get his Jeep. And Huntington, Long Island Jeep dealership. Island Jeep. And we walk in there, and the guy that ran the place, was he had twin brothers, but it was Bob and Eric. And Bob's dealing with my dad. And Eric walks up. And he's like, hey, Eric. Your Jeep's coming along nice. You're going to like it. And my dad just looked at me like, fuck, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, something we didn't talk about. I'm like, I bought a used 87 Wrangler. And he's like, you did? I'm like, yeah. And I'm having 33s and a lift and lights. And we walk over there, and I mean, I wish this was on. I had a picture of my dad. He's just stunned, because when he walks in, it's a white Laredo. It's kind of a base. It was the, you know, it didn't have fuel injection. It was still that crappy carburetor. And he walks in, it's jacked up. It's got super off-roader lights on it. It's got a huge chrome push bumper. I mean, it is as 90s as can be. I'm even putting neon on this thing. That's how bad it was. And my dad's just looking around. He's like, what is this? And I'm like, I couldn't wait around any longer. I had to buy one. So I came here and I bought this, and I just didn't know how to put a lift on. So they did it for me.
Dude, that is super cool, man.
I that truck went through hell with me and back. That was my end of high school.
Those YJs, man, they last forever and ever. Yeah. And they were bulletproof. Even if you had the four-cylinder, they were bulletproof. You know?
Yeah.
They didn't go anywhere with the four-cylinder, but they were still bulletproof.
I'll tell you, you think that's bad. Before I had the CJ we're going to talk about, I had another one before that I did up, like Magnum PI. I don't know if you saw that one.
No, I didn't. No.
So I found this...
like with the rainbow decals and everything?
Yeah. So I wish we could put pictures up here. Maybe I'll just give you some pictures you can throw if we ever do video. So I found this up here in this area. There's a farm area called Red Bluff. Mm-hmm. And right before COVID, February 26th, I bought this thing. This guy was listening to this 81 Jeep CJ7 in poop brown. Like, it was a copper brown metallic, which is the same color as my Eagle now.
Yep.
So,
which by the way is a rare color.
I didn't realize how much, and yeah. I also didn't realize how nice that color is when you can polish it out or even repaint certain areas. And it's so 80s. But at the time when I bought this as a designer, I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, I want this CJ, but like, what am I going to do with this color? And so I'm sitting around here, and if you notice, I've got the Detroit Tigers hat on. Mm-hmm. I was a Magnum PI fan as a kid. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, what was brown and was cool? I'm like, TC's helicopter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to get wild.
I'm like, let's have some fucking fun with this.
Yeah.
So I had a friend that owns a wrap shop. And I was like, hey, man, I got this crazy idea. And he's like, you want a what? And I'm like, I'm going to wrap this thing like the helicopter. And I'm like, can you print me out the graphics and everything? I'll design all the graphics and you just use it on your plotter. And he's like, yeah. And he normally does Lamborghinis, Ferraris. I mean, if you get anything brand new and it's a $200,000 plus price tag, he's the guy that fixes it up for you. I show up with this $3,000 CJ7 in the shop. And all these people who bring in their Lambos and their SVOs are like, what the fuck? Is this piece of shit doing next to my $350,000? So I bring it in, design all the colors, do the whole thing. It says, you know, inner island transport on the hood. I even did the island hoppers sticker, a round sticker on the quarter panel, the front quarter panel. I mean, and it was dead on.
That is awesome. I need to see a picture of that. I've never seen that.
Radwood, I had the whole, unfortunately, I look more like Higgins than I do like Tom. But so I brought it in and to Radwood, and people just lost their shit. And I'm like, do you know what this is from? And I even had the like license plate that said Masters on it. I mean, I had gone to town. I mean,
Amazon, every I dotted, T crossed,
everything, every interior. I had the CDs in it. I mean, I had like I had a keychain that says "Love Your Doberman."
That is getting to the bottom of the funnel, man. That is awesome. That is super.
And the rabbit hole went so deep on that. And the funny thing is when we were talking before, like you said, cars, like I barely sell them. I'm not really known for selling anything. Like I've only sold two cars in my life. Mm-hmm. Those were all in the same year last year. And it's because people came to me and they're like, I must have this. And that's what happened with that CJ.
It's funny. That's what happens with me too. It's like you get cornered on the street and somebody's like, I want this. You know, I live I'm in between two beach towns in coastal New Jersey where, you know, the people that live there, money just falls out of their pocket, you know, and I'll be getting out of the car and somebody will stop and say, hey, I want that. What do you want for it? And you throw them a number and it's just like, they're like, okay, yeah, no problem. No problem. Yeah. Here's my address. Just bring it over with the title. Tomorrow I'll have the cash. You're like, okay, sounds good.
That's pretty much the Jeep The only reason I sold the CJ, I loved it because, I mean, it was a four cylinder, so it was slow as heck. But I will say, having a six and a four, what's really interesting is the six will get you there all day long. It has plenty of torque. You never have to think about it. The four is a different story.
Yeah.
So it's a little lighter. It's more nimble of a Jeep. So it's almost, I'm going to call it like a flat fender or a CJ5, but there's something about it that you have to work at it. So the more you drive it, the more you get used to certain roads, you know what RPM you need to be at, especially when you live in San Francisco Bay Area, there's a lot of hills.
Yeah.
So like you kind of like realize that you're going fourth gear and you're 45 miles an hour going anything more than 10% grade. So you're really quick to know how to like shuffle down to third, back to fourth, third, back to fourth, and then kind of get around turns and not lose speed. I actually enjoyed driving a slow car fast. But that truck, I loved it. The only reason I sold it was the story that I had from it was great. But then the guy who bought it, like my buddy that works, that owns the wrap shop, he said, I'm looking for a CJ and yours came in mind. And I said, well, why? He's just like, so this guy, he's got a house he's building on Maui. And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, it's perfect.
Like, oh, and he saw my Jeep and he's like, yeah, he's been seeing you around town. He just happened to say it. And I said, I knew you. And I said, oh, he's like, you want to sell it? And I literally told him, I was like, it would take this much cash in a McDonald's brown paper bag. And 10 hours later.
Did he have the McDonald's paper bag is the real question.
I walk into his office and he had the paper bag.
That is awesome.
Down and I said, I looked inside. I said, is that cash? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, I'm like, sold. And I said, and this thing's going to Maui and he's going to keep the livery? And he's like, yeah, he's going to keep the Magnum PI livery. I'm like, oh, they're going to eat him alive there.
That is super cool. Maui.
They're going to stop him left and right.
That is super cool, though. What, you know, talking about your collection, you know, what is the present state of your collection? What do you have right now? I use this word, you know, oddly, but in your inventory, right?
In my inventory.
Yeah.
So I've got a weird eclectic thing. Since COVID, I've gotten into trucks. I was a little bit into them before, but like I went really full bore. I just found them more interesting. The stories were better. Fixing them up was greater. You know, I've restored two trucks to like perfection. One of them I still have. The other one, unfortunately, is not with us anymore. I had a little accident. I won't do that again. I restored it to perfection. I never drive it. And it was actually a real work truck before. It's a 55 Ford pickup. And I body worked this truck and block sanded this thing for months. I mean, when I tell you the thing is straight, I mean, it is concourse straight. And makes my own color. So it's one off, completely my own, beautiful color. Actually, the color gets more compliments than the truck does. People love the color on it. It's this beautiful green blue. And after I did that, I realized it was fun to do it, but most of my trucks are patina trucks. I really like creating a history or a livery. Some of them are actually accurate. Some of them I just play with, like the Magnum PI. It was just a great brown truck, and it just needed just a little bit more flavor. But in my collection now is a lot of trucks, but before I did hot rods. So I got into building like old 30s cars. And then I've got Plymouth, which is my 50s car, which is a very rare car. It's a Plymouth Business Coupe that has an Art Morrison chassis, big motor, all airbagged, lays frame.
That's super cool.
It used to be baby blue. Funny story is my wife, when I was about 2002, before we got married, we got engaged. And I joked around. I said, hey, my wife's Chinese. And I said, in my culture, I said, after you get a ring, I'm supposed to get some kind of gift. And I was just totally kidding. And I was on eBay at my brother's house in San Diego. And I saw that, well, I was on eBay and there was this Plymouth. And I didn't know, but 2 weeks later, a truck shows in front of the house and there it is.
That is super cool, man.
Not what I would have bought, but it's funny. Like I said, things just kind of, you make them what they are. So it showed up. I said, did you drive this thing? She's like, no. I'm like, so it's got a flat 6.3 on the tree. It was the slowest thing on earth. And it was a business coupe, which is rare. They're a 3-window. And it was rusty. I mean, it was like, it was from LA, but it was definitely spent time on the beach.
Yeah.
So that car, I just kind of kept going with it, stripped all the metal off it, left it bare metal now. And it's just this nasty beast.
That's cool.
You know, all metal. And I don't think I'll ever paint it. I mean, I just like it all raw. And that's kind of what taught me that the patina of something people find interesting. And so I did the 50s cars. I did the 30s cars. I did the rockabilly scene. I built a roadster out of what I call 50 state parts, where I decided to buy one part from each state and ship it in. It took me about 2 years and built this 31 roadster. And all the parts are vintage. And they're all from different states, and that's it. I just want to buy one part from each state.
That's super cool. What a good idea.
It's fun. And like when I explain to people, it won a Good Guys Award when I took it first. When I finished it, I first took it to a Good Guys show, which is not really where that thing belonged at all. Everything there was like Roy Brizio or their Boyd Coddington cars. In walks this, like, it's not a rat rod, but it's not a finished car either. It's painted, but it's kind of like very raw, and it was kind of, it's an authentic car. And it's not trying to be like Trog, Race a Gentleman. It's not trying to be a perfect boardwalk racer. It's just a mix of custom and everything. And I think that was my design's kind of eye on it. And yeah, it won. I was shocked. I was like, really? You voted for this thing? So it just kind of like happened and kind of went forward with it. And then when I was in New York, I was into German and Italian cars. So
I had that phase. I've definitely BMW M's, Maseratis. And if you think managing and building and having a collection of American and some European classic 4x4s is there's a lot of trials and tribulations. Yeah, late model BMW M's and Maseratis is a whole different headache.
Yeah, it's an entirely different, and you know, it's also the environment you grew up in, right? So that's what we were around. Like I explain to people two things about me here in California. Sometimes it's interesting is I never had really Mexican food until I moved to California. Mm-hmm. Most people don't realize that a lot of people are South American on the East Coast. So Peruvian food, Colombian food, Brazilian food.
So true.
You know, like we have all that, but Mexican food, I didn't really have a lot of tacos and Mexican stuff. So when I got here, I'm like, wow, this is good stuff. And then the other thing at the time we grew up in, Japanese import stuff wasn't as popular on the East Coast as it was on the West Coast.
Nobody had it. It was always European.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody who had any bagged out Civics or anything like that. So I got into Volkswagens. So I was into water-cooled GTIs.
That's cool.
I was doing shit. I mean, when I talk dumb, Chris, like I had a friend of mine that had a Corrado VR6 and wrapped it around a tree.
That is cool. Like, I mean, the hatchback, the Corrado hatchbacks.
I got an 89 GTI. Huh. I wonder if that'll fit. And so I swapped the VR6 motor and transaxle in that thing with an EIP turbocharger. And that fucker ripped like, I mean, I was killing Mustangs. Like, it was crazy. I go to Francis Lewis Boulevard and just lay down a strip front wheel drive all the way down Francis Lewis in this Volkswagen. And people are like, what is wrong with this kid? It was fully set up, full cage, new speed kit, super spring exhaust. Like, it was as obnoxious as you can get. And that was me at 18.
That is awesome.
But Volkswagens. And then I worked in Long Island at you remember Glenn Clove Ferrari?
Remember Glenn Clove Ferrari.
There was a couple of people that after they shut down, they started their own shop. So I went to work for these guys as an apprentice or a shop helper, fixing Ferraris and Italian cars, Lancias, and talk about quirky cars, like constantly needing attention. And I got a little hooked on the bug, and I got myself a couple of throwaway automobiles that were at the body shop, and they were also, left at the mechanic shop, and too much work and not enough money to fix it. And they were basket cases, so I told the guy, I was like, I'll take them off your hands.
Yeah.
And now they're, I'm glad I kept them. But one of them had an apartment, but I had a garage in San Francisco before I had an apartment. Like, I shipped it out.
And that's super cool.
Barely afford to keep it running. I mean, I had no money, and I still don't have a lot of money, but I had no money. So I'm trying to keep this 246 alive. So it's gone really crazy. And then it went from that to like little Porsche stuff. And then I love these replicas, these 550 replicas.
The Speedsters.
Oh man, I got a Spider. That is a crazy motor in the back. It's 1,375 pounds. I mean, it'll keep up with modern 911. And I mean, just looking on people's face when they're in their 993 and it's keeping up, and I'm like, oh shit. And I'm crazy enough to drive it that fast. So it goes all over. So, but lately it's been the trucks that you know me for.
That's cool. So let's talk about some of your Jeeps. I mean, I'm a Jeep guy at heart. I mean, I just finished a Defender 110 that I imported from Europe, which is looking primo right now. I just started a Grand Wagoneer, or actually technically not a Grand Wagoneer, the OG Grand Wagoneer, which is an 82 Wagoneer AMC. Limited, right?
Yeah.
So that is, and my baby, my first classic car I ever bought was 1981 CJ7 base model. It's it's orange. It's Omaha orange, which was a factory color for that year. Great with a 4-inch lift and 33-inch tires. And I've had that since 2009. And I call that car my wife. Like I love it. I will never get rid of it. It will always have a special place in my heart and also in my garage. So let's talk about your Jeep collection, because I'm a 90s kid, and I got to tell you, your Jeep collection is like everything everybody wanted in high school, right? From your YJ to your CJ7. But let's talk about the CJ7 Golden Eagle. Like, where did that come from? Where did you find it? And I mean, it is, we took back to impeccable design. I mean, it is just impeccably designed. It is absolutely beautiful. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Okay. So that one, actually, our friend Paolo, who is another Jeep nutcase.
Yep. I hope to have on the podcast one day.
Oh, I'll get him on here. I'm actually leaving for Italy in a month, and I'm staying
to see him.
He's got a house in Lake Como.
Okay.
Where he keeps his Jeep collection, and I'm going to visit him, and he's letting me use his Jeeps around Lake Como. And then we're also going to see Bruno from the Jeep Museum.
Oh, get out of here, Bruno Jeep. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
So we'll have, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's this, you know, when you start getting into this stuff, the amount of people you meet and how fantastic people are, the amount of people that have contacted me with rare parts and they're like, hey, man, I'll give you a swinging deal. I just want to see this used on one of your trucks. You know, because they know they got in the back of somewhere. The Jeep community is by far my favorite community. So I met Paolo because we were both running around with these Wagoneers. And every time we posted something on Instagram, I mean, we just get, you know, we just were shocked that this many people wanted to follow our stupid Jeep escapades.
Yeah.
And one day he said, hey, where do you live? And I'm like, oh, I'm up in the Bay Area. And he's like, well, I'm in Mountain View, which is like an hour away.
Without traffic, by the
way. Without traffic. Like, you want to meet up? And I was like, we're going to get these two Wagoneers finally together, because everyone would be like, imagine you two met, and they didn't know we lived this close, and neither did we. So we put them together one day, and I mean, just people went nuts, because he had his orange one, and I had my National Parks truck. So
The SJ.
So, like, basically what happened was, you know, he's in Italy, so he called me up. He's like, Eric, help me with my problem. I found this CJ. And it's up in Santa Rosa, which is about an hour and a half from here. And can you go look at it for me? I'm going to buy it. So I go up there, and this really nice guy, old fireman from the Presidio, which is a national, kind of like a park here by the Golden Gate Bridge. He was a fireman for years, and he's retired. And he has his Jeep sitting on the side of the house, and it's been there since 2000.
Oh.
So it's been kind of covered. It's really weathered. Like, the interior was okay. You know, it had no love, and I had no idea why he parked it. He told me, oh, it had a second gear problem. I've never known anybody to park a truck for a second gear problem.
Yeah, no.
It's a little bit like, But, you know, he just was a super honest dude, super nice cat. And I looked over it, and I got to tell you, I was with my buddy Mike. We both looked at each other, and I was like, I can't let this go to Italy. So I called up Paolo. I said, hey, Paolo. I said, I can't let this get on a ship to Italy. He's like, really? Why? And I'm like, it's a California truck, man. It should stay here. It's got some weirdness to it. And I just kind of want to restore it. And he's like, well, you already have one. And it was the exact same color. The Magnum EI Jeep was the exact same brown. So now you want two in the same color? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking weird like that. I just can't let it go. So he agrees. He's like, hey, all right. Okay, I really want something with a 304 V8. I want something different. You know, because in restoration, what he wants to do, full perfect restoration, which are beautiful, like Bruno Jeep. But the reality is, when you talk to Bruno, if you're going to spend the money, it's like a Porsche 911. You could buy a 912. You're going to still pay 911 prices for parts. Yep. So, like, for him, you could buy the CJ7 with a six-cylinder, but the 8 is a lot more valuable in Italy. So if you think about financial at the end of your restoration pricing. So he's just like, yeah, it makes more sense for me to find a V8, which we found him a V8. And I took the 6, took it back, talked to the guy before I left. And I said, why'd you let me buy this? Because people have been trying to buy this thing forever.
Yeah.
He goes, I talked to you for a while. Everyone that's come to my door like once a month for the last 20 years. I asked him what they're going to do to it. And, oh, I'm going to put 35s on it. I'm going to put a huge lift and lights. And he would just shut the door in their face. He just didn't want to see it go like that.
You were going to keep it real.
He asked me, and he said, what are you going to do with it? I'm like, put it on 31s where it should be. I'm probably going to have to give it a 2.5-inch lift because it's kind of sagging, or at least get stock springs, which you couldn't get during COVID. And, you know, I'm going to keep it really light, but I'm going to be very authentic to the truck. I'm going to try to polish it out before I even paint it. You know, and I just really don't, I really like the patina of it. And that was enough to win him over. And he was just like, I'll sell you the truck. And what's amazing too, you want to talk about amazing Jeep community. He originally had offers for like $4,500 for that truck. And the lowest offer he had was $2,500. And when I said, what do you want for the truck? He said, $2,500. And I said, that's the lowest price. And he goes, do me a favor. I know you'll finish it. When you finish it, come up and take me for a ride. So in April, I got up
there. Out.
Got up there, called him twice to hook up. Kind of, he had some family issues. His son had some family issues, so he couldn't hook up the first two times. Third time was a charm. Showed up, pulled up in front of him, and I mean, the guy was waiting outside, sitting in his chair. You know, he's in his 70s, and he just was like, yeah, I could just see it in his face when I rolled up. He couldn't believe. And I had sent him a couple of pictures. Hey, I got it running. Hey, we fixed this. This is what was actually wrong with it. Which turned out to be the one of the main bearings. The first main bearing had spun. Mm-hmm. So I actually redid the crank and redid the bearings and kind of got them all. So it's still the original motor and still everything else. I just was able to polish it down. So showed up. He comes walking over, and the smile on this guy's face was just what it's all about. And he's like, I'm like, I told you, you know, I'd take you for a ride, but I'm going to do one better. I want you to drive it. And he's like, no, I can't drive it. It's too nice now. Like, I'm like, no, man. Like, it's still a Jeep. This was yours for years. This is one of your favorite things. You held on to it all these years. And I said, you got to drive it. Sat in the passenger seat. He starts the truck up. And if you know Jeeps, you put them in first gear. If you don't know clutches, you give a little blip of the throttle and let the clutch out slow. You didn't even need to do that. He remembered where the clutch point was in that Jeep so much, he literally pulled away without any pop of the throttle. Equaled out, didn't awesome. Even jerk it or stall it, and he just first, second, third, next thing you know, we're doing 70 miles an hour.
And that is a really cool story, man. Now, did he shed a tear when you pulled up is the real question.
You know what? I think he wasn't the most emotional guy. I think probably the most he's been.
Uh-huh.
And then I asked him what his favorite song was. And we put on the Doobie Brothers.
Ah, that's awesome. And cruised around.
Yeah. Instead of like, I put the speakers back in the truck, but I didn't, the head unit I left alone. It wasn't working, but I ran just Spotify and just to go down the road, topping the doors off. I've got this great video of him driving it and just smile on this dude's face. And I said, I promise you I'll bring it back. And it's always here for whenever you want to drive it.
So I'm in love with the jerry can on that, on the Golden Air Eagle. It's just the way you designed it with the mount. I mean, it's super cool. It incorporates in, you know, that's one of my favorites. I will say we could talk about your cars for hours and hours and hours, but people aren't going to listen anyway. Right. No. So, you know, your YJ Sahara is just, I mean, it is so cool. I mean, that is what I wanted. You know, don't get me wrong. I loved my teal, you know, YJ.
We all wanted the Sahara.
Yeah, but everybody, that's what I wanted. Couldn't afford the Sahara. It. Yeah, exactly. That was the problem. You know? So, you know, that was like the car I wanted. I mean, your XJ Cherokee is just the red. I mean, it is the Laredo, the four-door Laredo. That is a cool car. That is a cool car. Another one where I wanted that in high school. But one car that you just mentioned, which I do want to talk about, want to hear about, is your Trail Service SJ, yeah. Right? Yeah. That Wagoneer, where did that come from? Is it legit? Is it real? Did you design it with that all the logos and the patina, or was that something you found?
No. So that truck came to me by accident. A friend of mine was in LA and he was looking at a 53 Chevy pickup. And he knew I was looking for a Wagoneer, and I was looking for my parents' Wagoneer originally. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, there's this Jeep here, and it's got this sticker on the front bumper, and I don't know what the hell to make of this, but this guy's telling me he's going to do something to it, which I don't think you're going to want to hear about. Which turns out to be, he was going to cut the suspension off and make it a lowrider. Literally going to make it a hopper.
Only in California.
And the money that from the 53 Chevy pickup that my buddy was buying is where the money was going to make hydraulics on that truck.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I talked to the guy and I saw this picture and it says Moffett Field, NAS, Naval Air Station. And I looked at it and I was like, what is that? And I called my brother who's in the Navy. I said, hey, what's up with this thing? And he goes, oh, he's like, you got an early 60s Jeep. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, Naval Air Station was what they were calling Moffett Field. And then it was also NASA. So the truck's livery is not actually a Park Service truck. If you look, it says Trail Service. I didn't use Park Service, so I couldn't get in trouble.
Yeah.
But it actually was a NASA Jeep. So it's we found out, it was used as a fleet vehicle. It towed the blimp around here, which is this huge blimp they had for weather out in California in the 60s. And then was on base until 77 and was purchased actually originally by the rocket propulsion director, Patrick Lewis. Mm-hmm. And then in 77, it was registered for the first time on California roads. He took it home and had it as his personal truck.
Oh, that's years. Cool.
He passed away, and in an estate sale, somehow it ended up in L.A. So when I saw this, and my brother's telling me the stuff, and you can go back to Moffett Field, and they're like, that was a Navy truck. What was interesting, though, is most Navy trucks are always painted. Mm-hmm. This wasn't painted. So there's a key to this story that we're trying to figure out through Moffett Field, and I believe it is. The motor was changed to a 327 for pulling power. Mm-hmm. Then it was given double redundancies on transmission cooler, oil cooler, and radiator. Notice the New York accent, radiator.
Yeah.
So all of this was changed up. The gears were changed. And it was just an odd, like, why would they do this? And then you start looking at the wiring. The wiring is 60s jet wiring underneath the hood and everything.
Get out of here.
I started looking at it. I'm like, why would you do all this? Why would you not paint this truck? And my brother kind of turned around and he's like, you know, in the 60s, you know, people were coming out here for electronics. There might be a real reason why that truck wasn't painted so no one knew it was a Navy truck or a NASA truck. It was a normal Jeep. I'm like, huh. And he goes, there's a very likely chance, good likely chance, that maybe some astronauts might have been in this truck. Maybe it took them to where the capsule's electronics were being built and things like that.
Oh.
I was like, no way. And he's just like, we could probably, it's probably some top secret stuff, but there might be some pictures in Moffett Field, the historians. So we're trying to get pictures right now if we can find something where that truck might have had Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong sitting in it. I mean, I just lose my mind.
Yeah,
if that's the case, the livery comes off and it goes back to like what it was.
That's cool.
But that's the story of that truck. So me doing some fun with it, I wanted to do the livery of the national parks. I love national parks. It has this great vintage feel to it. The gold bronze is just, I think they call it polydesert bronze. Like, it's beautiful. You know, it's so patinaed well. And I got a buddy of mine who's a sign painter. I came to him like, I want to do this livery. And he's like, really? And I'm like, and I'm going to, once you are finished with it, I'm going to sand the truck down and make it look like it's 60 years old. And he's like, well, okay. So we painted everything, did all that hand. There's no decals.
Oh, that's cool.
I drew everything up in Illustrator and a drawing that I can do in computer, and then printed out all the shapes that I wanted. And he hand painted everything. And then I distressed it. And then just, it fools everybody. to the point where I live in the hills up here, and we have fire problems. And when we had a fire problem a couple years ago, they want us to clear brush. Mm-hmm. I had these old ladies coming out of their houses, and they're like, "Are you here to clear brush?" Fantastic. So, and I drive it all the time. I mean, it's a great truck. It's super quick with that 327. The gear ratio is probably 456s. Mm-hmm. So it hustles. It's like 9 miles a gallon. But she's got no problems. I drive her all over the place, and then
that's super cool.
And just put my theme on it. Put my flavor, I guess you can call it. Mm-hmm.
No, that is super cool, man. That's neat. That's one of the ones I wasn't sure if it was legit. Like, you found it with that patina, or you designed it, which is even more amazing. The fact that you designed it and it looks that realistic. Oh, yeah. You know, like it was in the 60s. Like, it was a trail service truck in the 60s.
It's been to Yosemite and fooled actual park police.
That's cool, man. That mm-hmm. is definitely cool.
And then they took a ton of pictures around it. I mean, they were just shocked. They were just like, the fact that you do an homage to it. I was worried that I might get in trouble because it's saying Park Service, so I did National Trail Service.
Yeah.
And like, everybody, it's been like, they've retweeted it. They've, you know, re-Instagrammed the official Park Service. Like, it's been pretty cool. And even Jeep posted it as their one of their Wagoneer things when they were getting ready to release the Wagoneer. It was an honor to be part of that.
That's super cool, man. You know, as we start to wrap up, you know, there's a couple questions that I ask everybody, and the one question that I want to ask you, which everybody has this that collects cars, is what's the one that got away? What was the one that you loved that you sold, or for some reason, you know, other crazy reason, or got, you know, totaled or stolen, whatever. What's the one, you know, throughout your years and decades of collecting all these different types of cars, what's the one that got away?
My original Jeep.
There you go. That's cool. Right. That
thing. We're in the process right now. It's in Westbury, Long Island. I'm in the process of retrieving it.
That is awesome to hear. I love that. I absolutely love that. The one that got away from me was this year. I had I don't know if you ever saw it on my Instagram, but a 1981 CJ8 Scrambler that I bought out of the woods of Vermont, and I spent way too much time, way too much money on it. And this thing was absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, for anybody that knows the Jeep market, the Scramblers just have gone through the absolute roof. So though I say I spent too much, you know, money on it, I wasn't into it that deep. And I said, hey, you know, and I actually, Paolo was part of this story, right? Because he sold his SJ for like a crazy number on Bring a Trailer. So I was like, hey, Paolo, like, hey, man, like, so like, how was your experience? Like, he goes, oh man, like I my experience, like, you saw the number the thing went for. So I was like, all right, whatever. I'm just going to throw it up on Bring a Trailer. You know, that's a whole another 3 month process. Right. Oh, yeah. And man, it went for a pretty big number, and I was happy with it. But the day that truck, it's actually out in Lake Tahoe now, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A Bay Area guy bought it, and put it at his house in, North Lake Tahoe. So, ironically, in the same neighborhood as like where my best friend lives. Out in Tahoe. So, I'll come across it one of these days, but that was my one that like it just got away, and I regretted ever selling it. I mean that had a 304 in it. What's your daily driver now? I mean, that's the other question I like to, you know, part with when I part when we start one. To wrap up. What's your daily driver?
I don't have one. No. So, you know, I've got some more modern stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like the other day I resurrected, got a 97 Stepside,
OBS. Super cool.
37s. And it looks like a zombie. Like it looks like a Baja zombie vehicle. Like, it's not all black. It's actually white. But like, when I show up in this thing, people are like, what the, really? This is what you got? I'm like, yeah, they thought I have some like perfect 911 or something like that. I show up in this, you know what? Since I used to daily a Lotus Exige.
That's cool.
I did basically about 70, 80 miles a day to and from the office. And I drove that because my thought process was I didn't need anything too luxurious. It has air conditioning and it's got a roof, and it get good gas mileage, and it's ridiculously fast. And I mean, I I can't believe I didn't kill myself in this car yet. But like that would probably have been my most daily. But since I'm not traveling a lot, I mostly do under 30 miles a day. My dream, maybe it was like yours, that we'd have one for every day of the week. Mm-hmm. So I wake up and depending on what I got to do in the day, sometimes it's the CJ7. Sometimes I want to go in mom and dad's Cherokee. Sometimes I want to take the Porsche out. Sometimes I want to drive the 55 Ford. Sometimes I take the Roadster. Like I just basically try to enjoy every time I'm moving somewhere. So for me, we have a Grand Cherokee, like a 2017. That thing sits in front of the house. And I mean, it collects so much dust and dirt. I never drive it. And when I'm in it, I'm like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather be without a top indoors and like extreme temperatures than, be in the lack of comfort. That's not my thing. So that's why I never got into Bentleys or any kind of Mercedes or any kind of like luxury vehicles. I probably will be 16 until I'm 110.
I love to hear that, man. That is super cool. And I'm jealous and I'm envious. I keep my car collection offsite from where my house is. I live in a beach town in coastal New Jersey where we don't have a lot of space. So I have to keep it offsite. So I wish I could just go out to my garage every day on site and just say, okay, this is what I'm going to drive. I'm going to drive my Defender 110. I'm going to drive my CJ7. I'm going to drive my CJ8. I'm going to drive my CJ5, whatever it is. I mean, sure. So I'm very jealous, man.
Well, I mean, here in San Francisco, we got a tight space. So I've got a place I rent, a warehouse I rent about 30 minutes from here, but I always keep six at the house.
And
I put
That's in, cool.
I put in like the reason I bought the house I live in is it had 20-foot ceilings in the garage.
Four posters. You do, so, don't you?
So my lady was like, oh, it's got glass windows upstairs. And I'm like, man, it's got a 20-foot garage downstairs. I'm like, But all of a sudden, like, I just didn't say nothing. I'm like, I'm going to keep my excitement quiet. I can't let the real estate lady know that this is the only house in the neighborhood that has anything like this, and it's getting car lifts.
That's awesome, man.
So, yeah, so the hardest part of the day is just getting them off the fucking lift so I can go drive them. Sometimes I got to jockey stuff around everywhere, but my neighbors all think I work for Jeep.
That's funny. So I'll leave you with this one last question. You know, what, like, outside of cars and classic four-wheel drives and Jeeps, you know, is there anything else that you collect or that you know that is a hobby?
Yeah. So as a designer, I collect a lot of things, and sometimes designers collect things that have like a price tag attached to them or rarity attached to them. That's not my thing. My thing that I learned from St. Louis when I lived there working for Swiss Army was that that area was an industrial revolution area. So there was lots of things being invented in the 60s and 70s, which means that most people who live there don't care about that stuff. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just overstimulation of cool stuff. So classic radios, tube radios, 60s and 70s, if you look at some of them, they're all like dashboards of cars. I love old tools. So some of the tools I have could literally break my wrist in half, but my grandfather would have used them. So I kind of like some of that. Puts a little soul back in things. And then I just collect random little things that just turn me on. Just something that I look at that as a designer, you just like, you see it and you can imagine things with it, or you can... you just want to touch it and play with it like a kid. So once I see something like that, and it could be anywhere, and all of a sudden I'm like, ooh, I'm going to collect this. It could be Pez. And I'm like, oh, I'll collect all the Pez thing. And it's just, and it's not to own it. It's, and to have collections, even my car stuff, you know, they're very diverse and they're just for fun and function. Like I don't sit there and have to have the perfect example of all these things. That's not the point. It's just basically getting up and walking through them and smiling.
That's cool. I feel as car collectors, and this community of car collectors, you know, we all love our cars. We love our projects. We love our restoration projects. We love driving our cars, but we all have that like other thing, right? And I'll give you an example. I was just in a 150,000 square foot garage. Yes, I just said 150,000 square foot garage packed with, I want to say, somewhere between 120 to 150 Cadillacs, all from the 30s to the 70s, right? This is a local guy, you know, around here who's a collector, and he just loves Cadillacs. And we're walking through this 150,000 square foot garage, and he's showing me all these Cadillacs, and they're all absolutely immaculate. And I was like, wow, this collection's insane. He goes, no, this isn't the crazy collection. You want to see the crazy collection? He had in an area in the back thousands of brass national cash registers. He's I have the largest collection of national cash registers. He could care less about his Cadillacs, right? I was enamored with these Cadillacs. All he wanted to talk about were these national, you know, these brass national cash registers. It was cool, right? It was definitely cool. But we all have that like other cool thing that we collect.
Well, the radios I told you about, like the guy who I got them from had an old guy that was going to retire, and his kids couldn't stand all the radio museum shit he had. And I came in there for 2 years and bugged this guy, and he would yell at me every time I came into his shop. He was the nastiest old man.
Yeah.
Turned out to be this beautiful human being. But like, he just put me through the ringer of like, I'm going to make this kid hurt the whole way through. And he taught me how to do the radios, taught me how to restore them. And I just found a love for him. So like the cash registers, you just go down that rabbit hole. And yeah, some people want to collect for money. Some people want to have every one. And some people are just like, I need another project. I'll just do another radio.
Yep. It happens, man. That's super cool. Well, Eric, I can't thank you enough for your time that you spent today on the Classic 4x4 podcast. It really is greatly appreciated. For everyone out there listening, if you don't follow Eric on Instagram, his Instagram is Auto Legend, and the legend is phonetically spelled LGND. You got to follow him. You got to check out his awesome collection of cars, specifically Jeeps. We talked a lot about those today. So Eric, I can't thank you enough for spending the time today, and I hope to cross paths with you at some point in the future and actually get to meet you.
Oh, that's for sure, Chris. I appreciate it, and thank you for having me on. And when I'm back East Coast, I'm gonna ping you, because I want to see these Jeeps.
We're definitely getting together, no question, my man.
It's good talking to you.
You too, bud.